The annual Slow Living Summit in Brattleboro, Vermont, is a gathering focused on sustainable living, resilient communities, and the personal inner transformations that are necessary for both. At this year's summit, June 5th through 7th, some of the plenaries and workshops included presenters on the transition movement, made up of people who recognize the seismic shift in society that's occurring due to peak oil and climate disruption, and who want to prepare themselves and their communities to make that transition as smoothly as possible. They're learning how to make clothing, preserve food, and harness renewable energy sources. Another key feature of the transition movement is its adherence commitment to building personal relationships and a network of mutual support. Chuck Collins is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and director of the group's program on inequality and the common good. In 1995, he co-founded United for a Fair Economy to address issues of economic inequality. His latest book is 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. He's also a transition activist in Jamaica Plain, an economically and racially diverse section of Boston. When he heard about the Slow Living Summit, he asked to facilitate a plenary session on transitioning to a new economy, and recruited Massachusetts transition trainer Tina Clark and environmental activist and systems thinker Gus Speth to be presenters. He also facilitated a workshop on emergency preparedness, after which Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with him about how these various strands of the progressive movement can be integrated.
We had a session earlier about emergency preparedness. Well, there's an issue that completely cuts across politics. You can be a climate denier, but you probably think that that communities should be prepared for blizzards and power outages and ice storms and earthquakes and, you know, things that come along that through no fault of our own. So there's an example where people talking to their neighbors in a non-ideological way can, you know, maybe build some interesting coalitions. I mean, the anti-fracking movement across New York State is a great example of place-based response to an outside threat. And that does get a lot of people in action. I think we haven't paid enough attention to the more neighborly, face-to-face, small group, bottom-up organizing, and that those cells are important. At the same time, you know, need to have sort of a cohort of people who, for whatever reason, are paying attention to the signs of the times around climate change and want to engage directly in that and contest power in that area. It's really fundamentally about organizing block by block and in neighborhoods. That's going to reach a new group of people. Everybody agrees we should know our neighbors, we should know who's vulnerable, and we want to help each other. That connects and that reaches people. And when people are in a relationship, then I think you can have conversations. Well, have you noticed we're having more weird weather events? You know, I think that's connected to the changing climate. We have to sort of respond to that too. I think that's a very bottom-up way to both diversify and get more people to face an overarching catastrophic threat that can't be just sort of, oh, it's climate catastrophe or climate change is not just one of 10 things anymore that we should be. It's going to have an overriding impact on the economy and food system and work and energy and everything. So it does have a special category, special status. As much as people say, oh, that's an environmental issue, Mother Earth bats last, and she has the final say.
Chuck Collins, at this conference and among transition communities in general, the vast majority of folks involved are older white people, you know, most coming from relatively educated and skilled backgrounds. How much of a problem is this?
At the local level, I think it's really a problem if local organizing efforts haven't sort of figured out how to bridge class and race diversity in their community. It's going to hold us back. That's a huge part of what we're trying to work on in Jamaica Plain. I mean, we have an organizer who's Latino, and we're trying to bridge the multiple JPs and doing events in Spanish language and doing events in different venues, and actually, more important, connecting the themes that are most urgent to low-income and communities of color to kind of the transition agenda, not and vice versa. But I'm not also totally surprised if you think about if people have the slack or the social capital, if you will, to be future-oriented, to look at external threats that are somewhat abstract. That is really not for everybody. Most people live in the present. They live in the sort of day-to-day present in terms of their economic needs, or they live in the past even. It is a somewhat small segment of people who read and think about threats in their more abstract state, the number of parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. Pretty soon that's going to change. I mean, the extreme weather events, the challenges of another economic downturn, whatever it is, will become a moment, a teachable moment and a organizing moment around the transition.
One other question, and it's been raised here already a number of times, is the whole issue of language, like how you address this issue. If you talk about transition, I mean, it means a lot, it's like could mean anything, could mean a lot of different things. And JP, I guess they call them resilience circles. I mean, who can be against resilience, right? Does it matter what it's called? People are saying, well, it doesn't matter what you call it. You know, it just matters what you do. I mean, just like the whole concept of global warming. Like, oh, warming is so nice, you know, instead of calling it climate catastrophe. Yeah. So, I mean, words really are important. What do you think about what the vocabulary is that's out there so far? And do you think there's something else that would be better?
Well, I think we just have to keep testing out. No advertising slogan works for everybody. I think we have to be open to making mistakes, recognizing mistakes, and changing the framing and the messaging. And for instance, in our neighborhood, if you organize and bring people together under the banner of climate catastrophe and peak oil, you know, you'll get a crowd in the room, but it'll be one crowd. It'll be people who have sort of that environmental framework. If you say, how are we going to face rising food and fuel prices, and how are we going to connect with young people about their future jobs of the future and their livelihoods and how to get out of debt and have good lives, that brings another group of people, brings the equity group. There's the environmental people and the equity people. Each of them have urgencies that are kind of different and are focused in different places. They're both legitimate urgencies, but we should not be too locked into any particular language or framing.
That was Chuck Collins, director of the Institute for Policy Studies Program on Inequality and the Common Good, and an activist with the Jamaica Plain Transition Movement. Learn more about the transition movement by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.